afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Here's my best introduction to today's topic. That's right, we are talking about Alaska loons. In season, our state hosts all five: common, Pacific, red-throated, yellow-billed, and the Arctic loon. Around South Central, we see and hear mostly the common in the Pacific. The valley is very well known for having many loon lakes. Where do they come from? How do they behave? What's the best time to observe? How can you get involved in citizen science observations sponsored by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and its partners? To learn all about this and more, we have three guests today. I'd like to welcome Jeff Fair. He's with us on the phone from Lazy Mountain in Palmer, but he is not a lazy guy, but he's calling from Lazy Mountain, right, Jeff?
Yes, I am, and I'm happy to be here.
And I think you've been tracking loons and studying them since 1978?
Yeah, that's right. You're giving away my age now.
Well, no, it's your status, because you know a lot. And I think you began on the East Coast and eventually worked your way up here. So we'll learn more about that during the hour. In the studio with me, we have Jean Tam, co-founder of the Connors Bog Loon Cam. Welcome, Jean.
Hello.
And we really have to say to Jean, thank you, because this show idea came from Jean when Charles Wolforth and I were doing an invite to listeners to tell us what they wanted to hear. And Jean called in and said, how about the loon cam? And it took a while, but we got here. So Jean, thank you so much for that idea and for participating today. And we have one other guest with us. This is Linda White, a loon watch observer who has focused her observations on jay bear. So Linda, welcome.
Oh, thank you. Good to be here.
And Linda is calling from out of state, Arizona, right, Linda?
Yes, I am.
You must be bound for Alaska soon, no?
Oh, yes, next week. So I'm eager to have cooler weather. It's pretty hot down here right now.
So it's going to be a race. Who gets back to Alaska first, the loons or Linda? And, of course, we consider our listeners and callers our guests, and we invite you, if you've been an observer, either formally or casually, and have some, you know, stories or questions, this is a great opportunity for you to give us a call and share your story or ask your question. We can take your call at 550-8433 and statewide 1-888-353-5752. And we also welcome your email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And before we jump in and start talking, I just want to let folks know we have a lot of links on the Hometown web promo for this show. We have everything from news articles about the Connors Bog Loon Cam, links to the Cornell Ornithology Lab, where you can actually hear calls and read facts about loons. We've got the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has a graphic which shows all the loon lakes in the South, well, actually statewide. And so it's very extensive, and you can kind of see where those loons are. Oh, my gosh, there's just a lot of information. So if you hear something that piques your curiosity, check out alaskapublic.org and see if that link's there. And one thing that we know is not there yet, Jean, I'm leading up to this. The webcam is not live yet.
Not yet.
Right. So you've got the nest out there.
Yeah, we've got the nest island out, and we have a camera installed. And
you're all ready to go.
Yeah.
But the family is not yet back. So so I would like to do a little round robin with our guests and invite them to tell us how they got stuck on loons, I guess you could say. Jeff, let's start with you, because you've had a career really around loons and biology and ecology. What snagged you off the bat?
Well, to be honest, it was landscape more than the birds at first. I really wanted to be working in the northern landscapes, the boreal forest or north of that, and loons were the invitation to do that. And I took a job in 78 with actually the Audubon Society of New Hampshire to monitor loons in the northern part of that state. I went back later on to direct their loon recovery project for 11 years. And then I just I was married to loons. It doesn't take long when you're out there in the twilight and you hear the loons calling and you're looking around at the pointy timbers, which we do exactly the same thing here in Alaska. It doesn't take long to fall in love with the loons as a study species, but also as just a part of the environment that is so romantically involving.
That's how, I mean, I'm a neophyte and sort of a groupie, really. I mean, I just want to learn so much about them because their call is so magnificent, and that's what has kind of hooked me. And I also like their black and white coloring. And Jean, what about you? How did you get started?
Well, my husband, Scott, and I have always been birders, but as far as loons go, we didn't get really involved with them until we moved to the Conners Lake area in 1988.
Uh-huh.
And so when we got there and we started watching the loons on the lake, we live not on the lake, but a little distance away. So we started watching the loons, and we saw that every summer they weren't doing very well.
Oh, what kind of things did you notice?
Well, we knew that they were nesting along the shoreline somewhere in the reeds. And there's a lot of activity on shore, you know, dogs and people.
There's a lot, yes,
so
it's a popular spot.
Yeah, we figured that was why they weren't doing well, because we never saw any chicks. So that's when we decided we should, you know, try to help them.
And how did you learn what to do? Because I've seen pictures of the nest, and it has a canopy.
Yeah, we got all that idea from Jeff.
Oh, all roads lead back to Jeff.
Yeah.
Okay. Jeff, what can you say about that? Do you remember back to that time when...
Oh, I absolutely do. And the artificial nesting islands were first actually a research tool used by Dr. Judith McIntyre, who was one of the queen mothers of modern loon biology. And in New Hampshire, we adapted that to be a management tool to avoid water level fluctuations and shoreline predation. The raft, as we call them, rafts, would be floated away from shore where fewer predators would swim to it. And when water levels went up and down, since loons don't walk well on land, especially common loons, the raft would always have the nest right at water level, so they wouldn't be drowned out or they wouldn't be stranded from it if the water level went down. And that information was out around a lot by the time that I met Gene and Scott, and I'll give Scott credit for building the Cadillac of loon rafts.
I would say it looks pretty substantial and well thought out. Yeah.
Right, and then Gene made it a NASA capsule with an internal camera and everything. It's just fantastic what they've seen.
Yeah. Gene, when did the camera come into being?
Well, I should probably go back to when we first built the island, the first island. Scott made it out of spruce logs, and we put it out there with the canopy and everything for about...
Do you anchor it to the bottom?
Yes, it's anchored, okay. So it won't float all over.
Exactly.
Anyways, we put it out there for 3 years, and they didn't use it.
Oh.
So we were getting pretty discouraged, and we were about ready to give up. And then the fourth year, they found it, and they started using it, and they've used it every year since.
So is it the same nest that you take out
Yes.
at the end of the season?
Yes, we pull it out in the fall and put it out
uh-huh.
in the spring.
Well, that's great. How big is it, Jean? Can you give us some dimensions?
Oh, I think it's about 5 by 5.
Mm-hmm.
And we've put all kinds of things on it to try to keep other birds off.
Like what?
Oh, the canopy.
Yes.
And then we have these bird spiky things on top so that the other
birds
won't
land on the canopy.
On top.
Oh.
And then we've put screws all around the logs so that the ducks start sitting on it. So to discourage them, we put these screws all over it, sticking
right.
out so they can't sit on it.
Wow. It sounds kind of fortified.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And then after they started using it, you know, we were just so pleased. But it was hard to see what was happening from shore. And so after a few years or a couple of years of them using it, it looked like it was a pretty sure thing that they would be coming back every year. So I got the idea of putting a camera out there. And so I did a little bit of research and found a place in Homer that was selling wildlife viewing cameras.
Wow.
And so then I had to go through a fundraising effort. I wrote a bunch of grant applications, and we did some other fundraising. You know, Scott built a whole bunch of bird boxes to sell. He's a woodworker, so he built all these nesting boxes and sold those. So we raised enough money to get the camera system the first year and did it, and it was a huge success.
Uh-huh. How did you stream it?
Oh, in the beginning, gosh, who was it? The Daily News, the old Anchorage Daily News.
They streamed it for you on their site?
Yeah, that was the mm-hmm. first few years they did that.
Mm-hmm. And so how many years have, I think you said, but I don't remember.
Yeah, it started, the first year was 2003.
2003, so 13 years,
yeah.
More than a dozen years. Every year it's been out there?
Every year except one,
uh-huh.
when I forget what happened.
Something prevented it.
Yeah.
And is it the same loons?
Well,
or what can you tell us about that?
That's the interesting thing. The female, we think, had been coming before we put the island out there. And then she started using it. And then in 2003, Jeff came over with some other biologists, and we were able to band her.
In 2003?
Yes, first year. Uh-huh. So that was quite an effort.
How do you do that?
Jeff will remember how we did that.
Can you describe what it entails? Is there a net?
Jeff can probably describe it better.
Well, basically, in those days, we only had one technique, and that was to spotlight them at night. And so we picked the dimmest summer evening we could find that year and put a canoe in. There's no motors on that lake. And we put a spotlight on the birds, which allows not only them to sort of freeze, causes them to sort of freeze, but also they can't see us if they're looking into the spotlight, so they don't realize there's a canoe and a basically a big, almost like a dip netting salmon net with a long handle. And that's how we eventually caught her, although we had quite a time catching up with her, even with the spotlight and everything. And I just wanted to add to what Gene's saying. When we banded her, we put a typical silver band from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on one leg, but then we added three more color bands so that there was a unique color combination on her legs. And I don't remember what it was, but what we would refer to today, if we looked at a chart, it would be like red over silver on the right and yellow over green on the left. So she had a unique color band situation that you could even see from a distance if you had good binoculars sometimes. But certainly under Jean's cam on the nest, we knew that that was the same female.
Wow. Yeah, it was blue over white on one leg.
Okay, Jean,
I was
remembers.
Only guessing.
And so how many years did she come back? You think she was there before you banded her? She'd been coming before. How long
and
did
then,
you?
Well, she'd been coming every year up to last year.
Until last year, oh.
And we don't know if she'll come back this year, but see, we think she was getting really, really old. She had been really successful all the way up until about 2 years ago, and then 2 years ago she came and didn't lay eggs. And then last year she came, and we think maybe she laid one egg that we found much later.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't raise it. But then the last 2 years we've had a new female come and lay eggs.
Okay, so...
So that's been really interesting, seeing this, turnover.
Yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit about loon age, since we're talking about a loon maybe aging and maybe not returning. I don't know, Jeff, can you jump in here? How long do they live?
Well, probably they don't all live to 30 years, but they can live that long. And some of the birds that have been banded back east... common loons, this is, and we're looking at Pacific loons, by the way, on Connor's Pond.
Right,
but
yeah.
The common loons that have been banded, and many more of them have been banded and monitored year after year, and a couple of those are up into the high 20s at least now of age. So we know that some of these birds can survive for a long time. And a bird that lays very few eggs and then really takes care of their young, just sort of the opposite of mallard ducks, loons and eagles would lay just a couple of eggs per year and take care of those young closely. Those are the birds that depend on adult survival for the species survival. And if you start losing adults a lot, then you're in trouble because they need to be long-lived and push all these chicks out into the wilds, and there's a low percentage of those that that survive, but that's what keeps the species going.
So heavy duty parenting skills required and necessary. I know I wanted to pull in Linda here. I wanted to ask you, what was it about loons that got you started? I know you're going to point to Jeff and say it's all Jeff's fault, but
yes, I am. He was my inspiration, so I have to say, probably back, I believe it was 1998, Anchorage usually during that time period would have an annual spring loon festival. And there was a loon festival at spring, and they had some silent auction going on, and I signed up for the loon trip with Jeff. Anyway, I won the loon trip, and is what it was. He took us out to Elmendorf and Fort Richardson in a canoe, and we explored various lakes. He showed me where nest sites had been, and I have to say I was just hooked immediately. So,
how many years have you been watching over on J-Bear, Linda?
Well, 1999 is the first year I started as a loon watch volunteer, so I've been doing it every single year, and I absolutely love it. So you learn an awful lot by observing loons, and I'll be continuing again this year. Now, the problem with J-Bear observing is you have to have a sponsor to get on base, so it would not...
It's not just open to anybody.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it would not be open just to anybody unless you had a sponsor mm-hmm. to come on base and, you know, watch the loons. But I do monitor 10 lakes, and at this point in time, only 3 lakes have nesting loons. Back in the early 2000s, there were 6 lakes that had nesting loons. But as one of the pair perhaps did not return, the lakes have diminished for nesting loons. So I'm down to only 3 lakes right now with nesting common loons. So,
Linda, do you go out there and paddle around in a canoe, or do you have a place on the shore? Do you stay all day? What kind of paperwork? I actually want to let folks know that the Citizen Science Loon and Grebe Watch is still ongoing, and we have a link to that on our site. But, you know, kind of what is the expectation for an observer? Same time every day, or what kinds of things are best practices?
Well, you're just free to monitor on your own. So usually I try to go out at least once a week. But once I know that the loons are getting close to hatching their chicks, then I try to go out at least maybe 3 times a week so I can actually see the newborn chicks. And with the Loon Watch program, at the end of the season, they like to know if a pair nested, if they were successful, how many chicks hatched, how many chicks survived, and how many chicks actually fledged. And if it's possible, they like to know where the nest site is on the lake. So you're just, I usually just stand on the lake shore, and usually you can watch the one adult loon. If the other one's on the nest, if you watch the loon as he's resting, you get a general idea where the nest is. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's fairly easy to find the nest, but go out whenever you want.
Just in case people have just joined us and they're wondering, what are they talking about observing from the lake? You know, we are talking about Alaska loons, and they're about to come back. Some of them might be back. We're not on every lake, but they're not yet at Connor's Bog. But we have 3 experts with us. Jeff Fair, who's a independent wildlife biologist and ecologist, is on the phone with us. We have Linda White, who is a longtime observer at J-Bear, watching up to 10 lakes there, I think you said, Linda. And then we also have Jean Tam, who's guilty for this show because she's the one who asked for it. And she has been, I think you said you're called the Loon Lady. The Loon Lady.
Some people call me that.
So she and her husband, Scott, are responsible for the Loon Cam. But everybody's kind of intertwined because it sounds like Jeff was there at the start of that. So anyway, that's what we're talking about. We welcome calls if you have observed loons and you have questions about their behavior. We can take a call at 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752 or also an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. I would love to talk a little bit about some of the unique qualities, the biology of loons, and some of the research and the links that we have on our website. They're pretty interesting. And I want you to jump in here, Linda, Jean, or Jeff. Some of the facts I saw, that they're incredibly agile swimmers. They have solid bones that make them less buoyant and better at diving. They quickly blow air out of their lungs and flatten their feathers to expel air within their plumage so they can dive quickly. I would love to see that. And I wonder if it's really obvious when you're watching. Something that I found interesting is, and we talked about it a little bit at the top, Jeff, sometimes loons will land on roads, mistaking them for waterways, and some loons can't take off. They need water to take off. So, Jeff, why don't you join me and tell me what some of the unique qualities are for loons?
Well, I think it's best to look at it ecologically, and you've nailed a whole bunch of the physical attributes of loons. The heavy bones and the rear placement of their legs. Unlike mallards, they can't just stand up on land, common loons at least. And in fact, all of the four species that are larger than the red-throated loons have a hard time standing up. So they really shuffle along if they get stuck on land.
Do they waddle, Jeff?
Always right.
Do they waddle?
If you can picture sort of a bulldozer, they use their feet and they push themselves along, and if really stressed, sometimes they'll put their wings out like crutches.
Oh.
But it's typically a very slow, arduous way that they walk on land, and so they nest right next to the water.
Mm-hmm.
So those heavy bones are excellent to help them catch fish and also to avoid predators in the water, but because they are great divers,
mm-hmm.
but they have to nest close to shore, or else when they change over on the nest, and both male and female will incubate, but when they change over, if they're 10 yards offshore, that just gives the gulls and other predators a really good window of time to dive down and take the eggs. So they nest very close to the water, and that's why the rafts are good on lakes and reservoirs where the water levels can go up and down and fluctuate a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Something else I read, and I want to know if you could tell me a little bit about this. The loon has sharp rearward pointing projections on the roof of its mouth and tongue that help it keep firm hold on slippery fish.
Well, they certainly can keep a firm hold on on fish. It's pretty amazing. But if you ever get into the position where you're actually capturing a loon, and you get the pliers-like pressure from its bill on one of your fingers, you understand that that's another part of keeping that
survival.
Fish
survival. Yeah.
Headed for the stomach.
Yeah. Yeah. Something else I read, and I think you and I, Jeff, had a little conversation about this. Many people said to me, oh, you know, they're the oldest birds, and that's why they're in the front of all the bird catalogs and things like that. But you and I had a talk about that a little bit, and it's maybe a little more nuanced than that.
Well, you're talking to a pretty much boots-on-the-ground biologist here, and, you know, 70 million years, and whether they're the oldest bird species still extant on the face of the earth or whatever, I'm not sure our paleontology and archaeology and everything are up to really saying that. There were signs that they are a very old family of birds, which I'm sure is true, but several of the other birds are very old families too. And some of the modern field guides now do not put the loons first, as they always have. They are expected to be or reputed to be these days closer hierarchically to the gulls, whereas in years past they talked about them being close to the alcids and other seabirds. To me, right now, that matters less than, I mean, we can't imagine 70 million years. There's some speculation that the yellow-billed loons of the Arctic evolved separately from the common loons about 100,000 years ago, and we can't even imagine 100,000 years.
Right.
But the point today is, you know, their beauty on the water and what they offer us as biometric canaries in the coal mine, so to speak, of to look at our environment.
Right. I wanted to ask Linda or Jean whether they had read anything about the age of these birds, or if you have anything, any books that you do recommend, whether they're new or old, you know, that you you have found useful.
Well, I think I know Jeff has written a couple of books on loons.
Why don't you give us some titles, Jeff?
Yeah.
Well, actually, I've never written a book entirely about loons.
I remember an introduction.
I participated one. In fact, the latest one from back east, which focuses on common loons, of course, because that's the only bird back in New England, is called Journey with the Loon by Dave Evers and Kate Taylor. And that's about as up to date as I can get to for a popular book about loon biology and everything. A lot of my work in Alaska in the last 15 years or so has been up in the Arctic, and I have written chapters in books called On Arctic Ground under Debbie Miller's authorship there, basically, but I've contributed to that book, and I've contributed to Arctic Wings, which talks about waterfowl and loons in the Arctic Refuge.
Oh, that's we should probably add those to our list of if people want to dig a little deeper and learn a little bit more. That might be fun. Let's see. I'm just trying to think. I wanted to know what we do know that the chicks, the eggs and the chicks are vulnerable. And I think Jean and I talked about eagles being pretty sharp at this process. But once the chicks learn how to dive, and what is that time period when a chick is sort of going to be able to be a little more self-sufficient?
Well, we found that the chicks are most vulnerable right after they've hatched. You know, they go out within a day of hatching, they go out on the water with an adult to get fed. And as soon as they get away from that island, you know, the eagles cruise over and can see them, and they swoop right down and grab them. So if, you know, because at that point the chicks can't dive yet. It takes them probably a week or so, or at least a few days before they can learn to dive. And those first week is just really,
really treacherous.
We've lost a lot of chicks that way.
And the loons do sit on the nest. At least I saw images. I've not actually observed a live nest, but on the internet I saw that. They typically, and do both, do the partners share the nesting?
Yes, they take turns incubating.
How long is the egg an egg?
Well, for ours, they sit for 25 days for the Pacific loons. I think it's longer for the common.
Yeah, common loons are more like 28 days or so.
And I think, well, we talked about loons generally having like maybe two eggs.
That's the usual number.
Yeah.
Although we've had, in the past, we've had them lay just one egg. In fact, we had one year where they laid one egg. It hatched. The chick got taken the first day by an eagle. And then... I thought that was the end of the season. And then I checked back 2 weeks later, and there they were with two eggs on the nest.
Wow.
So they immediately
laid two more.
It takes a couple of weeks for them to generate.
Generate eggs.
Two eggs.
Yeah.
So, they lay two eggs, and they raised two that fledged at the end of the summer.
Wow.
That's a remarkable observation, too. And that is one of the values of Gene's and Scott's loon cam, is to be able to see things like that, because even a biologist like Linda or me being out there and trying to observe, if we're only there one day a week or 3 days a week, we're likely to miss that whole thing. And we say, oh, my gosh, I thought it was over incubation. I thought there was only one egg, but now there's two, and then it's a mystery. Gene solved that, and I only know of one other instance of Pacific loons doing that, and that was by Jack Barr, an observation by Dr. Jack Barr in Canada decades ago.
Wow,
so
that makes...
This is a really neat thing.
Yeah.
And I'm going to add one more thing. We talked about loons being able to take off, but they need water. A number of years ago, we were trying to capture the male. The female was banded. That was the first one that was banded on Connors. And Gene asked us if we could try to catch the male. And we had this new way of doing it in the daytime by luring them in with calls and a decoy, and then having a net that would rise, like a tennis net that would rise out in front of them so that they couldn't escape. And we had both of the pair of Pacific loons on Connors actually leap straight out of the water and fly over a net that was probably at least 5 feet above the water.
Wow.
And drop down. And I said, well, who else has ever observed Pacific loons taking off from a standing position in the water?
That's amazing. That's
all these things that Gene has offered to
us. Yeah. Well, we're going to take a little break, but our show is on loons. We're expecting the loons back at Connor's Bog here any day. And I'm talking with Jeff Fair, Gene Tam, and Linda White. And you're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. And, of course, you just heard some more common loons there. We have a couple of really fabulous guests on with us today who are either loon observers, longtime loon observers, or biologists and ecologists. So I'd like to welcome back Gene Tam. Gene, thank you. Linda White, who's calling us from Arizona. She spends a lot of her observation time on Jay Bear. And of course, we have Jeff Fair calling in from Palmer. And Jeff has made a life of being, as he calls himself, a boots on the ground field biologist, observing and contributing to books. And we just heard about a couple of good books that Jeff has contributed to or likes in terms of backgrounding yourself on loons. So let's talk a little bit about that call that we just heard. That's called a tremolo, right?
That's correct.
And what does it signal, Jeff?
Well, it typically is expressed by loons when they are under some sort of stress. A predator nearby, another bird coming in, because loons are very territorial, and they'll protect their territory, typically with just showing their presence at first, and then maybe the tremolo that we just heard, which is also really some of the wild loon laughter that you read about from observers in years past. And then eventually they may even go into some dancing on the water, splashing a lot, making noise, and trying to get the other birds out of their territory. The interesting thing about the tremolo to me is that it's the only call that they'll give from the air, and both male and female will give this call. And they give it from the air, and when they do, loons have a... small wings for a heavy body, basically, and here's those solid bones again, weighing them down. So their wing beat is very fast, and when they give the tremolo from the air, you can hear an extra vibrato in that. It's not just like a trill. It's there's something extra about it, and you can actually tell they're calling from the air.
Hmm.
Common loons and yellow-billeds give very similar calls. Pacific loons a bit different, And the red throats sound sort of like a cat in a dryer. That's what I say.
Oh, I don't think we have a recording of a cat in the dryer.
No, I hope not.
Let me throw out our phone numbers for listeners in case they have questions about loons or maybe a story about an observation of a loon. 550-8433 in Anchorage or 1-888-353-5752 statewide. Or you can send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. You know, Jeff and Linda and Jean, is there a loon dance? And is it a mating dance? Or am I making that up?
Well, I don't want to hog this. Do you want to answer that, Jean?
No, you go ahead.
Jean said, shaking her head. No, I'm not sure.
I don't think there is.
Okay.
A mating dance, but there are dances, and most of them are territorial. And in early days, and actually through this day, some photographers who don't know what's going on, and I don't blame them. I mean, it's not loon behavior, isn't that universally spread? But some photographers and filmmakers will label a loon that's up. One of the dances is called a penguin dance. And they're just almost vertical in the water with their wings either outstretched or clamped up to the body. And they're sort of swaying back and forth and treading water with those large feet.
Wow.
But that's more of a territorial thing. Or if another loon is getting close to their nest, dangerously close,
mm-hmm.
they'll do that dance. Some of the grebes do a dance before mating. But it's not that common in loons at all.
Okay. All right.
It's often misidentified.
Huh. I feel like I had seen some behavior like that, but I assumed it was some sort of mating behavior, but it might have been protection. Yeah. Jeff, I know you have spent time in northern regions. I don't think we see yellow-billed loons here, except for up in the Arctic and also the Arctic loon. And do they look much different and behave much different from what we see down in South Central?
Yellow-billed loons don't, well, they look very similar to common loons, except that instead of a black chisel-shaped bill, they have sort of an upturned ivory-colored bill. There's a few different things about their markings, but the major difference between them is really their ecology, where yellow-billed loons are only nesting on the tundra, and basically from the northern part of the Seward Peninsula, and then across the Arctic coastal plain, but mostly in the western Arctic coastal plain. And the common loons are basically a boreal forest species. Just you draw the line across the top of the Brooks Range, and it's usually common loons below that and yellow-billeds above. And they are very similar, but there are differences in their ecology, and I think some of it goes back to these calls that you've been talking about, because the common loons are in a forested biome, and their voices, which are very similar to the yellow-billeds, are absorbed quickly by the trees around them. And the yellow-billed loons are up on the open tundra, and if you're camped up there at night in yellow-billed loon country, you hear calls almost identical to the common loons, but you can hear them from like 10 miles away because there's no trees in the way. It's a flat country, and I think that they have a greater social connection through those calls than common loons do.
Wow. You know, I when doing my little bits of research getting ready for the show, I went to the, I think it's called the Macaulay Library at the Cornell Ornithology Lab, and there were different descriptions there, and maybe we'll have an opportunity to hear some of them, but there were things like a hoot or a yodel. What are those about, Jeff?
Well, the hoot is a very close family call, and if you're on a lake, like on Big Lake, and near a loon pair, you might even hear that if you're close to them in the evening or whatever, between the two adults or an adult hooting to the chicks. And it's just a little whoo, whoo call, and fairly quiet. The yodel is the territorial call given only by males, in theory anyway, and we have enough common loons marked now. We know which is the male and female, and we've never seen a female yodel. But it's the most intricate call, and sometimes the longest. And that's we're just looking into that. But as far as what it means and how it's applied by these male loons, because they tend to change their yodels if they change lakes.
Oh, it's an identifier, maybe, huh?
Well, that's what we're thinking. There's still a lot of research to do on that.
Yeah.
But it certainly is a territorial call, and it's also in New Hampshire and actually I haven't seen it as much in Alaska, but an airplane flying over which has broad wings in near the head,
yeah,
probably like an eagle. And loons will yodel when that flies over, and I think that is just, you know, recognizing a potential predator.
Potential
we haven't
threat.
Seen that much here, but we mm-hmm. do hear the whale and sometimes the yodel when an eagle or an airplane flies over us here in Alaska.
Well, we will see if maybe we can queue up one or two of those. I would like to welcome a caller on Hometown Alaska. Twyla, this is Hometown Alaska. What's your question?
Oh, I just want to report that we are very excitedly waiting and patiently waiting for the loons to return to Birch Lake, which is a very small lake right north of Diamond High School.
And have you been observing for a while?
Just 2 years.
And you've had loons for the last 2 years?
Well, we had them the first year, and last year we think they had a nest in one egg and a baby. And I can't tell you if it flew away. But my neighbors might know.
So what draws you to it? Is it the call, or do you just love observing?
Oh, it's beautiful. I've been used to grebes for 30 or 40-some years, but now this is different, and so I'm adjusting to it. The grebes are, very loud, and the loons are very interesting. They're Pacific loons.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just concerned about protecting them and hoping they're coming back again.
Well, we'll wish that with you.
Thank you. I'm learning as much as I can, and we want some help with knowing about them to protect them from, it's a lake with 17 houses on it.
Mm-hmm. So some activity.
Yeah. And we don't know exactly what they're doing here and how it's safe here. But one end is owned by some of us wild people in Diamond High School, too.
Mm-hmm. So maybe that's a little bit less active.
We think that's where they have the nest, but mm-hmm. we don't know.
Yeah.
And we're in touch with Connors Bog people a little.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
she
contacted me last year about it.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
It just reminds me to say that, folks, if anybody is interested in maybe this citizen science loon watch, it's a loon and grebe watch, and we do have a link on alaskapublic.org. And I wanted to do a shout-out to Marianne Snively at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, because I did talk a lot with Marianne, and she told me that, funding has sometimes wavered for some of these citizen science things, but there is funding this season. There's a new coordinator. And also they're really open to partnerships with other people who love loons. And, it does seem like in Alaska this is a time for partnerships because we're going through some tough economic times. But birds transcend that, I guess, and they're going to be here anyway. And maybe there are some partnerships that could evolve. I know that the Alaska Department of Fish and Game said that they are open to that. So we'll see how that goes. But if anyone is interested, you can read about how to join citizen science loon and grebe watch programs. Go to alaskapublic.org, and you'll find a link there. And it's pretty self-sufficient. As Marianne said, you can go to that site, you can download the observation materials, and get to it, and then at the end of the season, send your material in. She also did provide her email and her phone number on alaskapublic.org, and is happy to take questions if people stumble around or just have different ideas and different thoughts. So, since we were talking about hoping that loons are coming back, that they will thrive, I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about what are the threats and what is our sense of their well-being. Are they thriving? Are some types of loons thriving and others not? What do we know about how well they're doing and what threatens them? Who wants to jump in on that?
Well, I had a question about productivity for Jeff.
Okay.
This morning I totaled up how many chicks fledged from Connors Lake from 2003 to 2012, when our banded female was very active. And it looks like they fledged 14 young over those 10 years, which means it's an average of 1.4 per year. How do you think How does that compare to, do you know what how that compares to other populations?
Well, a little bit. 1.4 would be high, probably for even across Alaska, because of that raft that you have out there and the known concern for those loons, and that does help protect them. But among humans, among human things, but not with obviously with predators or anything. With common loons, Dave Evers back in Maine has come up after many years of data gathering. To show that about 0.48, so about one half a loon chick per pair per year, keeps the population standard, keeps it going. And less than that might make you suspect a population trend going down, and more than that, if there is habitat, a population growing.
I'm going to throw out our phone numbers one more time. In Anchorage, it's 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752 around the state. Or we can also take an email at hometownatalaskapublic.org. I think I read somewhere that lead from fishing equipment, lead weights, is a problem. Does anybody know anything about that? Is that an issue?
Well, it's an issue across a lot of North America at this point. A lot of ducks were dying for a long time due to lead shot that were in the sediment of shallow ponds because of the duck hunters. And, you know, no one expected anything like that to happen, and then it did. But with loons, it's the larger things, like between the size of a lima bean and a green bean, some of those lead sinkers, for some reason, they're picked up. Loons do pick up gravel, for they have sort of a crop or a proventriculus that grinds up the food that they eat before it gets to their stomach, and they pick up gravel for that, and for some reason, they seem prone to picking up lead sinkers of that intermediate size, so much so that in New England, the common loon's primary cause of death, at least of carcasses that are brought into the veterinarians, that's their primary cause of death is lead sinkers. So that's pretty nasty. Yeah.
Okay.
And as long as I'm talking about New England, I'm going to add one more thing here. Global warming is going to affect our loons eventually if it keeps increasing. And probably the yellow-billed loons up north will be the first ones to be hit by that just because the habitat up there will be changing. But back in New Hampshire, late last summer, a loon died and was taken in for necropsy, and it was discovered that it was avian. What am I going to say here? I'm going to forget the disease now. The mosquito-borne disease.
Malaria.
Malaria. Thank you.
Okay.
Avian malaria that killed this loon, and it's the first example of that I think in all of New Hampshire, not only among loons but among any birds. And
that's
startling. Suggestion of global warming affecting things.
So the loss of temperature, the rise of temperature, and would that be something they carried from migration, or do we have any sense of that?
The veterinarian that has done almost all of our loon necropsies back there from Tufts University in Massachusetts said that it was probably acquired by the loon within 4 days of its death. So it was
treacherous.
Yeah, hit by a mosquito up there that was carrying the avian virus already.
Yeah, and then you say that's the first of that sort of thing that we've seen. Wow, that's scary. I know I've read a lot about the white-nosed brown bat and how that has really decimated and that it's creeping closer to Alaska. It wasn't here originally. That's really scary. We haven't seen anything like that in Alaska as far as we know, Jeff.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
You know,
and probably won't for a long time, but it is a warning.
I wanted to, you know, invite one more opportunity to hear a loon call. And since we were talking about the yodel, we have an example of that. And so we're just going to go ahead and give it a listen.
Hello?
Any comments?
Yeah, why do they call that crazy laughter? I don't get it.
Yeah, it's hard to know. Maybe it wasn't such a funny day for that loon. I don't know.
Well, there is some research on that, looking into what other messages are carried besides being just, you know, this is my territory, get the heck out. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the third note that gives other loons an idea, or may give other loons an idea of the size of the loon that is used, that is calling out that yodel, mm-hmm. which could tell them, this guy's bigger, I'm not going to try to take his territory away. And the number of those repeat phrases at the end seems to increase with the bird's anxiety of their stress over whatever they're yodeling at. Another bird being real close would have a longer, a higher number of those repeat cycles. And in common loons, it's not unusual to hear six or eight repeats. In the yellowbills up north, I rarely hear more than three, and often it's only one. It's very different.
Wow. Gene, anything characteristic of the calls that you hear on Connor's Bog?
I don't hear a whole lot. Occasionally, when one of the adults is sitting on the nest, it'll call, I guess, to the other loon that's off somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. But you hear that. How about you, Linda, over on Jay Bear? Is it? I don't know if you stay long enough or you're there in the evening, because I think evening is a common time, or maybe dawn, maybe?
Well, during the day when I'm there, I have heard the tremolo many times of the loon calling in the air as he, you know, departs the lake and flies off. So I've heard the tremolo quite often. And I've also heard the parents calling with their little hoots, you know, when mm-hmm. they have chicks nearby. So I have heard the hoots and the tremolo, but usually I'm not there in the evening, so I have not heard some of these other calls that we're talking about. So.
You know, I have a question about whether a new loon might come in and challenge the ownership of a lake, you know, does that happen? Have you ever seen that?
Oh, yeah. I've seen it quite often on Connors when I'm watching the loon cam. Sometimes a new male will come in and they'll have a fight.
What does a loon fight look like?
Well, it's mostly a chase.
Okay.
They'll chase, I can't really tell. I imagine it's the resident loon is chasing the intruder.
Like, get out, get out.
And they just chase and they do this funny sort of a paddling or rowing motion on the water, and they just chase each other around on the water, and I just haven't ever figured out why doesn't the other loon just leave, because it's so exhausting. I mean, they'll go on for an hour.
Yeah. And do we know if loons mate and it's the same pair coming back year after year? Do we know that?
I don't know that because the male has not been banded.
Okay. So.
And I think that they change.
In the east, where they've banded so many common loons, they actually, the outfit that I sometimes work with, Biodiversity Research Institute, who also has a website with some loon information on it, they monitor individual birds, and you can see that about one-fifth of the time there is a mate switch. Either the male or the female ends up on a different lake or a different territory, and a new bird is in on the old territory. They're watching that closely to, you know, to just figure out the demography of common loons back there.
Hmm. You know, something else I read that we talked about how the parenting is really intense because the chicks are so vulnerable. One thing I read, and I wanted to see what Linda and Jean and Jeff know about this, that when the parents leave the chicks and the chicks band together with other chicks and travel in a group, this is something I read, and I just wondered about it, because they're so careful with their parenting. This almost seems like you're on your own now, it's kicking you out of the nest. Well, does anybody know about that? Gene says no. No. How about you, Jeff?
Well, I can. Yeah, there's a number of things about common loons. And of course, common loons have been the most studied loon. Except here in Alaska, probably now the yellowbills have been pretty much the most studied loon, at least in recent years. But common loons are known to get to a point, and what we always used to call it back in New Hampshire was teenagers. New Hampshire and Maine was there would be groups on the larger lakes, sort of a pre-migratory grouping of a whole whole bunch of teenagers, which sort of look like adult loons in winter plumage. They're grayer and without the black and white. And then a group of adult loons. And the adult loons would typically leave several days sometimes before the young, the juveniles. Hmm. And no one knows how this works, but some of the banded juveniles come back and are on either the same large lake or a small lake nearby as they were hatched on. So we know that they figure out how to get out of here and how to get back, and you know, we're still learning about how they figure out where they're going to winter and that sort of thing. But it seems to be more innate and not them following their parents.
Interesting. You know, Jeff, you mentioned that you are often along on research trips because of your sort of Alaska savvy. You're really helpful, but some of the scientists are coming from elsewhere. What are some of the questions that they have that you're trying to work, that you have sometimes participated and helped out on?
Well, let me give you one example, just as an example. I was out with my chief colleague with yellow-billed loons, Dr. Joel Schmutz from the USGS here in Anchorage, there in Anchorage. And we had a loon that was, we scared off the nest in order to put a trap, just a very soft net that falls over the loon when it's on the nest. And we put that trap out, but the loon wouldn't come back on the nest. And I noticed it would come right into shore, right like it was going to go up on the nest, and then it would turn left, and just a few feet offshore would swim 5 yards that way and then turn around, swim 5 yards back and forth, but it wouldn't go up on the nest. And I suggested that this was because it saw something out of place, and it wasn't Joel or me. We were well hidden a ways from the nest site. And I suggested that it was our airplane with a high tail on it, parked on the next lake. And eventually, Joel asked the pilot to just take the airplane off and buzz away. And when the pilot did, the loon got straight back on the nest.
Wow.
And Joel said, "Well, you just earned your trip up here." and the thing was that I had seen loon behavior like that elsewhere when fishing boats were too close to the nest, and the loons just wouldn't get back on until those fishermen left.
That's interesting.
And in this case, it was the tail of the airplane sticking up above the tundra, and that was their deal. So it's just. It's not being smarter. It's just having more experience and spending more time out there and having an idea of what's bothering them.
I'm hoping we can squeeze in one more loon call. I just wanted to say we did have an email discussing the dangers of boat wakes and the effects on loon nests. And we did talk about that a little bit. That's why the nest is helpful. It's away from shore. But is there any other sort of tidbit people would like to throw out there? And then maybe we'll go to a loon call.
Well, we try to discourage people from, you know, taking a boat near the island at all.
Yeah. We're out of time. I'm going to just have to say it was a wonderful hour. I want to thank Jean Tam, Linda White, and Jeff Fair. Next week, Charles Wolforth will be back as your host. His topic is Alaska Native Issues with guest Daley Sambo. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Dave Waldron is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.